Hello everyone. Today's Citywire podcast in association with PIMCO is all about the role of multi-asset funds in the current environment. I'm Ian Horn, head of UK audience development at Citywire, and there is so much to discuss here. Before we do that, let me begin with some basic scene setting. Now, as things stand, we're facing a period of higher return dispersion as major economies are going through mid-cycle expansion, but transformative secular trends like technological innovation, green energy initiatives, and more inclusive socioeconomic policies can lead to attractive investment opportunities. We're going to explore fundamental shifts that are reshaping the economy and discuss their impact on the macro environment and multi-asset investment. So allow me to introduce my guests in this podcast. Firstly, Geraldine Sundstrom, Managing Director, Head of Asset Allocation and Portfolio Manager at PIMCO. Geraldine, thank you for joining us.
Good day and hello to everyone.
Yeah, great to have you here. And secondly, Guy Foster, Chief Strategist at Brewin Dolphin. Guy, it's great to have you here with us too.
Great to be here, thanks.
Brilliant. So I should go straight in and let's start with our first question, which is quite simply, where are we in the economic cycle? And what are the implications for top line growth and inflation? Geraldine, I'll start with you.
Well, today's world is very different from what we've been used to before the pandemic and after the great financial crisis. We're in an environment where growth is slowing, but inflation remains persistently high. And if anything, now we're turning an environment that is more and more stagflationary with the impact of the war in Ukraine. We call this the anti-Goldilocks world, with inflation too hot and growth too cold. Against this backdrop, central banks are focused on bringing down inflation, which could lead, sadly, the world into a recession. We just had the Bank of England was the first to warn us about this possibility. We will see if it is the canary in the coal mine. So certainly, we're in the late stage of the economic cycle, and the big question for investors is really going to be about inflation and interest rates as this growth momentum is slowing. We've seen top line growth still okay, but looking forward, it will very much depend as to how much central bank need to increase interest rate to get the inflation back under control.
Interesting. And Guy, would you add anything to that? Would you disagree with anything that was said there?
No, I think it's a depressingly accurate assessment of the circumstances. I think what the crucial thing for investors in this environment is to try and differentiate between those inflationary aspects that are truly transient, to use that cursed word, which we're never allowed to use again, and those that are persistent. But at the same time, you've got a couple of things which are a real problem for policymakers: a very tight labour market, and much as they like to preach the ambition of achieving a soft landing, the reality is that you're not going to address that challenge without triggering an economic slowdown, i.e. a recession. You know, it's just the kind of thing you're not allowed to say. And then beyond that, you've got the broader trends that people really do worry about sort of deglobalization, the costs of decarbonization and things like this. You know, many challenges which will be worth it in the end, but will not be very pleasant whilst we're enduring them.
Yeah, it sounds challenging, and it seems like we're agreed they're challenging conditions right now. And Guy, I'd like to stick with you. What does all of this mean for asset allocation?
Well, I mean, in terms of them being challenging conditions, it's very easy to think of them as being challenging conditions, isn't it? Like, it's very easy to think that this is a really tough investment environment and that last year was a really easy investment environment. But, I mean, ultimately, last year, if you wanted to insure yourself against inflation and make a positive return, there was just no way of doing that. There was no asset that was offering a strong enough return. Now we are in an environment where you've got we've fluctuated around 3% for a risk-free rate on a 10-year treasury. You've started to get inflation-linked bonds offering real returns, positive real returns. You know, they're not like back at the levels that we saw 10 years ago or anything like that. But after you've suffered a couple of years in which people would talk about TINA, that there's no alternative to equities, I think you've got to see some refreshing positivity about the fact that actually you've got a lot of every asset class has now got a better, longer term return expectation than it did just a few months ago. So that's a big positive that has to be weighed against. Yes, it's a difficult phase of the cycle to be investing in, but that's a relatively short-lived phenomenon.
Where do you find the compelling investment opportunities?
Well, if we look at equities, there are two parts of our portfolio. So we think we're late cycle. Typically, late cycle, what you would want to have is a lot more quality in your portfolio. And where we see compelling valuations relative to growth is in the defensive part, like healthcare and pharmaceuticals. So we've been increasing exposure in this area. But we also like certain select part of secular growth. I know it's got a bad rap at the moment because it got a bit inflated and people had invested indiscriminately. But the sell-off has also been indiscriminate. And there are a number of areas in the renewable energy that are relatively attractive, that are trading with low valuation, in particular the manufacturers of technology for battery, for solar, where we find attractive things to do. And on the other side, we are still keeping some short. We think that the broad market still at those levels, it's corrected quite a bit, but this will still be sensitive to higher interest rates and potential for recession. So we like to have a broad set of shorts against it that we will, act upon in a dynamic fashion. In terms of fixed income, here I would just divide between credit and core fixed income. It might still be a bit too early to jump in big way in credit. We remain selective, but we are increasing slowly our core fixed income, especially in those countries where a lot of hikes have been priced in the yield curve and where you have absolute levels of yields, which, could come down substantially should there be a recession. So I'm thinking about places like the US, Canada, or Australia. And last but not least, I suppose, you need to have one part in your portfolio that enjoys rate hikes. And we feel that this is in emerging market foreign exchange. Central banks there have started to hike interest rates in some cases already a year ago. Rates are historically very high. Real interest rates are looking better than in most of the developed market. Especially in Latin America, you also have currencies that are enjoying particularly favorable terms of trade. And last but not least, our models would point that a number of those emerging market currencies are deeply undervalued on a historical basis. So that's one last part that we feel now is of a more compelling place to invest currently.
Mm-hmm. And Guy, what are your thoughts on that?
I think there's a number of things to pick up on. I guess what we are seeing is some much better entry points into high quality companies. But similarly to what we were talking about earlier, I guess you've got to recognise that quality as a factor has been really punished very, very badly or very harshly during the early part of 2022, which is obviously. There's two sides to that. That's what's offering the opportunities, but it certainly hasn't been the defensive area that I think a lot of people intuitively expect it to be. Think there's a natural sort of association between high margins, which are a quality factor, and an assumption that provides inflation protection. Ironically, I think the companies that have got pricing power actually find that they've got a little bit less pricing power when you've got a big rise in discretionary costs. And so, during this phase of the cycle, what's been performing, what's been providing the ballast has actually been the low quality or the companies not associated with quality, with thin margins, with commoditized products, which often obviously are actual literal commodities. I find the appeal of emerging markets in this phase not that great. But I do. What I would say is, it's a real dilemma. I'd love to get Geraldine's thoughts on this about what we do with the dollar, which has been probably one of our best hedges so far. But it's performed so well during most phases of this cycle. It would typically do well during recession as well, but one always has to be a bit nervous when you've got one asset that's proving to be sort of perfect for all seasons. And with speculative positioning in dollar assets where they are, I do think that's probably one of the biggest conundrums for investors. So, I mean, what do you think about that, Geraldine? What's your view on the dollar?
Looking forward, and where we will have our eyes upon, is certainly that the dollar has been, as you pointed, extremely strong. And if we were to be in an environment where the market starts to say, well, you know, after all, things are slowing down and we might not deliver so many interest rates hike in the US, the dollar could soften somewhat a little bit. And then we might, on the funding part, so on the short side of our foreign exchange equation, we might reintroduce some dollar shorts. But at the moment, given the uncertainty, it still seems that it's a bit premature. All the more than Europe is so much in the vicinity of this war, is probably the place where a recession, we might be the closest to a recession, as Bank of England pointed, where you might have some black swans in terms of energy supplies to Europe, and also where we could suffer from fragmentation as central banks start their quantitative tightening. So for now, we've been avoiding that question by leaving the dollar sort of alone in this equation. But we could very well start to contemplate a short. But at this moment, it's probably a bit early.
Which megatrends do you think are most compelling for investors? And how do you approach them?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. And I think I would start with a note of caution, which is that megatrends, trends, themes have had a bit of a track record of sucking investors into trades which end up not living up to their expectations. And I guess the most obvious sort of mega trend that I think will be the defining challenge of all of our investment careers and possibly lives is that of decarbonisation, which I'm personally, fanatically committed to. It's not an easy decision at all to say, okay, great, I want lots of energy transition plays in my portfolio, because the whole time you're doing that, well, firstly, the valuations got very rich in those. Secondly, there's a big cohort of those assets that offer very low long-term returns. And thirdly, the thing that you're in danger of avoiding, and that many people will want for very valid ethical reasons to avoid, is the thing that's providing many investors with the greatest protection against the very real challenges that they're suffering in their personal lives.
From your perspective, you're seeing higher correlation between equities and bonds. Mm. What does that mean to you from a risk management perspective?
Well, it means that you're not going to get so much additional benefit from having a lot of bonds in your portfolio. I think it means that you need to look a bit more broadly in terms of what assets you can use for diversification. We've obviously talked about dollar exposure perhaps enough already this podcast, but that has certainly been a helpful component. Gold has been a helpful diversifier as well. I mean, commodity exposure in general has obviously been positive. And I think probably the way to think, or one of the important observations to make, is that during this change in correlations, sort of referred to many people as if it's a sort of lasting phenomenon, as if correlations were negative forever before and now they're going to be positive forever afterwards. But it's a very cyclical phenomenon. It's very common for you to see those correlations turn more positive during this slowdown phase of the cycle for pretty obvious reasons, which is both stocks and bonds are fearful of the prospect of higher interest rates from policymakers. So, there's an element of all this will pass to a certain degree, and certainly you would expect that when the economic environment somewhat inevitably does worsen, bonds will end up having their moment in the sun once again. you know, we've used a bit more inflation linked. We have carried a bit more credit. I think there'd be an opportunity to rotate that. So we've started rotating that from inflation linked into conventional, really, just over the last, just over the last few days. And the market so far seems to be reflecting that a little bit itself as well. So it feels very unintuitive to take inflation protection out of a portfolio. But we are obviously, hopefully, just passing the peak level of inflation, particularly in the US.
But there's a really interesting thing, especially post-lockdown, where we're looking at the valuations of certain companies, which may or may not be overvalued or undervalued in light of what's happened. How do you account for that? How do you get that balance between looking at valuations and also assessing an investment for its future growth potential?
We really feel the market has thrown the baby and the bus in this rotation. And there are areas of the market that really sit at the intersection between justifiable valuation and durable earnings growth trajectory. And it's really in those areas that you need to look for. I think there has been a lot too much of buy anything that's related to a sexy thematic. That's really not what we're doing. We really pick and choose those companies, pay attention to what's their edge, what's the valuation, how is the balance sheet, and really looking for justifiable valuations. And there are many trends that are unavoidable and inevitable. The reshoring, the fact that wages have gone up so much, will lead to more automation and digitalization, and that's one area that we certainly find very compelling valuation. Increasing exposure to things like semiconductors. The market treats them as a boom-bust asset that will suffer a lot because they think it's just PCs and smartphone. But now semiconductors have permeated pretty much everything that surrounds us, from electrification of our grids, our electric vehicle, a security system, robotics, the cloud computing, data centers. It's way beyond. It's very ubiquitous sector now that is very unlikely to see a boom bust cycle given the green and digital transformation that we are going to see ahead. And we think that finally, when growth slows, these fundamentals will eventually be rewarded because you have double-digit growth, you have high operating and net margins. You have very clean balance sheet, strong cash flow generation. These are not long duration assets by any stretch of the imagination. And many of them trades with single digit, next 12 months forward PE or in the very low teens. So they are at a discount to the broader market. So there are myths and reality in terms of the overvaluation of secular growth. And this is a moment to really revisit after the broad-based sell-off and pick and choose those companies that have a true future, no matter what happens to GDP growth in the next few quarters.
Okay. Well, Geraldine, Guy, that is all we have time for. But thank you for joining me and providing this overview of what we need to know about multi-asset investing and about the markets more generally. Look, these are interesting times, and I hope we've added some clarity for investors. Finally, thank you to everyone who's listened in to this Citywire podcast in association with PIMCO. Goodbye for now.